Did you know that the perfect snack exists that not only has the yum factor, because that's important, but also packs a real protein punch? I'm talking about Wonderful Pistachios, a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Now that's a snack you can feel really good about. It's hard for me to currently pick a fave because they have several flavors to choose from, including no salt and jalapeno lime options. But if I absolutely had to, I'd say I'm in my no shells, Wonderful Pistachios, sea salt and vinegar era. It's the ultimate snacking solution for when you need a quick, convenient, and tasty boost of pistachio goodness straight out of the bag. Whether you enjoy the ritual of cracking open each nut or you lean towards the ease of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has something for everyone. It's time to elevate your snacking game with Wonderful Pistachios. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more. Hey, hey, welcome back for another riveting episode of the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. My name is Bree and I'm the host of this show. This is your first time listening. Thank you so much for checking me out, checking out the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. If you've been rolling with me for some time now, I appreciate you, and I'm so glad that you decided to tune in today. Today, I have an awesome episode. I'm speaking with Rebecca Ferguson. She's a licensed mental health counselor based out of NYC. And today we're going to be talking about her experiences she has had an incredible life. And I don't want to give too much away, but I will just say her experience being a Black woman growing up in a religious cult. If that's not enough for you to press play or continue listening, I don't know what is, but we talk about her experiences as being, you know, quote unquote, one of the only ones, her struggling with her identity in this religious cult and in this environment, dealing with microaggressions and all kinds of stuff, and how she was able to get back in alignment with herself. So this is a super great episode. Rebecca is so honest and transparent, and I really appreciate her sharing her experience. So I will go ahead and get to it. But I do want to say that this episode was recorded actually quite some time ago, and I kind of goofed. So some of the views that I discuss in this episode, particularly pertaining to yoga and meditation, have since changed. So I would encourage you to listen to this entire episode. And then at the end, I do for a couple of minutes, just kind of talk about some of my views and how things have changed. So this episode is a little long, but you will get a lot out of it. I'll go ahead and get into it right now. Here you go. Hey, Rebecca, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. Why don't you take a second before we dive in and introduce yourself?
Thank you so much for having me on. So as far as like my background, my name is Rebecca Ferguson. I'm a licensed mental health counselor with about 11 years of experience working with people that have different mental health conditions, from depression to anxiety, PTSD, and other, severe and persistent mental illnesses. I have also done a lot of background training in like dialectical behavior therapy skills and cognitive behavioral therapy skills. So I really try to apply that to people suffering from various conditions, and specifically religious identity conflicts, issues with self-esteem, and like complex personal struggles related to racial and ethnic injustices. So I'm based out of New York City. I've been here actually for 3 years. Before that, I lived in Southeast Massachusetts. And before that, I lived in upstate New York.
All right. Perfect. So, you know, you sent me an email and I was instantly like, I instantly wanted to hear your story. You just have a lot. You have a lot. You've experienced a lot. You surely know a lot. And I'm excited to have the listeners learn more about you, learn more about your history, and also get some great takeaways. So, the thing that stood out to me amongst everything that you said in your email, and I'm just going to read this if it's okay, the exact quote, is you said you were born and raised in an evangelical Christian society that you later came to realize met all the standards for a cult, including the resulting effects of homeschooling and isolation.
Yes.
That
Yes, that right there is a lot. Let's go ahead and talk about that if you're okay with that. I want to know more about, so you said you were born and raised in this society, this Christian society that basically you realized it was, can I just say it was basically a cult? Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. So how I ended up, so I was born in upstate New York, and how my family ended up there is because there was this person in Florida where my parents met each other, and they were successful there. They were actually working at Kennedy Space Center, but they met this person who decided that it was, he said that God told him that everyone should move to upstate New York and kind of form their own community. And so, you know, on one hand, I think for a lot of people that were in that group, that felt good. It felt like, okay, I'm going to fit in somewhere. For my mom in particular, and I was not born at that time, but I know for her in particular, she was very close to her family. So that was an odd experience to just up and leave her family without really having a lot of explanation that made sense for them. But anyway, so they moved to this little isolated place in upstate New York that was extremely predominantly like white neighborhood, which led to a lot of discrimination for my dad on his job, which then like trickled down into like more stress within the home. And so I think for me as an adult, as I started to like process a lot of this issue, a lot of these issues, and really started to look at the impact that this whole decision that was supposedly, you know, made by God, according to the person, the person who said this, just really thinking about how it affected my family and how it affects us currently, and just really feeling like angry about it and having to really go through that whole process of really talking about it, because it was not easy to talk about. But I think for me to address that issue, that was the only way I ever actually got to a place where I actually, you know, felt like I was living my life that the way I was supposed to be living it, and not like this prescription. It seemed like before it was this prescription that was someone else's prescription, but I was taking it and it didn't feel right. It felt messy, it didn't feel authentic. It felt constantly like stress riddled and anxiety riddled, and what am I doing? And granted, those feelings persist in different situations, but I just mean as a baseline, that was my life for a while, and I really had to figure out what that was about. And doing that, that's where I really had to go back and address this issue of this group that turned out to be a cult.
My, wow. So, like, can you give me an age range of, I think you said you weren't born when they first moved to, was it New York, upstate New York?
Yes. So this was probably, they moved there, I want to say in the late 70s. I was born in like the early 80s. So I was born in upstate New York, and that's where I grew up until I went to college, which was not something I planned to do, but at the time I just knew I needed something different, so I ended up going away. But I was born at home, like I was born upstate, and me and my younger sister, but all my other siblings, which I have three that were born to my parents, and then one half sister, they were born in Florida, the other three.
Wow. So, like, what age did you, and we're going to go back, but ultimately, what age were you when you kind of started to break away?
I would say I was probably 18, because that's when I had no idea what I had originally, because I love makeup and I like hair and I'm like interested in all of those things. And so when I was in high school, my goal was to just go to cosmetology school. I wanted to go to cosmetology school. I wanted to do makeup. I don't know if you remember those magazines. I don't know if they still are around, but it was called Sophisticates Black Hair. It was like these Sophisticates Black Hair. Yes. So yes, I have, because I pretty much
Sorry.
like, no, it's okay, but that was like my thing. I used to like, I pretty much worked on and off since I was 11, and I used to like be so excited on like payday to like, I was gonna go get the new Sophisticates Black Hair magazine, and I would just look at like how people were doing their hair and like different makeup trends. And so that's what I really wanted to do. And then I think the thing that ended that career path for me was when I was looking around what was offered, and I realized if I did that, that I would not be able to live away. Like I would, like they didn't have dorms, right? So like a lot of the cosmetology schools would force you to stay where you were and you would have to commute. And I was like, no. Like if I'm going to go somewhere, I need to like actually be able to live away and like go away. And so that's actually how I ended up going to a 4-year school.
Okay, got it. Because it was like you needed to kind of escape, I'm imagining.
Yes.
You probably, yeah, for sure. So I know that you mentioned, or in the email, you mentioned that basically you were homeschooled and you just felt, or you felt isolated, and you probably were, in fact, obviously very isolated for a few reasons. Was it a part of the cult or the religion that you had to be homeschooled? Is that how that happened? Or what was the thought process behind that? Because homeschooling is not, it's a great thing. And I know a lot of Black families are moving to homeschooling or have moved to homeschooling, but it sounds like the experience that you had, it just wasn't the positive overall experience that one would hope to have.
Right. So I think there were definitely things that, you know, have helped me as far as like a really good work ethic. I think that setup really enforced like phonics and being able to like spell and write and script. And there's a lot of things that were positive takeaways from it. But I think the thing that weighed the most heavily on me and my siblings were just the feeling of isolation and always having this feeling of like, when are we going to be normal? So like you go grocery shopping, you go to amusement parks and you see people out and about having fun. And you see girls wearing like, you know, shorts and like tank tops and t-shirts. And it's kind of, I think as a child, there's that like natural tendency to want to just be like the other people that you see around you. And I think that's the piece that most often it was very obvious to us that we were extremely different. Not only were we like a few of, we were like a handful of Black people in a very like white town. So of course that stood out. It stood out that when you go to the drugstore, you can't buy hair products that like actually work for your hair or like makeup. Like there's just a lot of things. I mean, we weren't allowed to wear makeup, but we would try to like sneak and buy it. But even when we snuck and buy it, there were no like shades that actually fit our skin tone. So there's a lot of
those.
Right. But back then, like it's just kind of like, oh, this is what I actually didn't even know. Then this is actually really funny. At one point, because I was so unaware of like makeup and different shades, I remember thinking that people just used compacts to like block to block shine off their face, right? So one time I sneaked and I like bought a compact, but it was not a compact in my skin color. So I didn't know the difference. So when I talk of the isolation, like I think that's a good example because I literally, and it wasn't just me, like me or my sisters didn't know. And so I found out because when I finally did go to public school for the first time, I think I was in seventh grade and I was, you know, I was in the mirror, like blotting my face. And someone was kind of like, oh, why is she using white compact? And yeah. And here I thought it was because people used to use baby powder sometimes to blot like sweat and shine. So I was like, oh, it's white because it's like baby powder. Like that was my like prepubescent like reasoning. Like, oh yeah, it's white. And I wouldn't put too much because I didn't want to look like a ghost, but I would put like enough to make my face not look shiny, but clearly no. Nope.
Oh my gosh.
Nope.
And you know, it's crazy because growing up Black, it's already an experience as it is. We already have certain struggles just automatically based on the color of our skin, the environments that we live in, etc. So you not only have that, but then you're being homeschooled. So you probably feel a little awkward about that. I could imagine that you probably didn't have a lot of friends that looked like you, or maybe not even a lot of friends at all. So you're dealing with that. Now I have two questions that I'm just going to ask you. So when I hear the word cult, okay, I'm going back to, the guy's name, not Jim Brown. What was the name of that guy that Jim Brown. Lord have mercy. Yes, Jim Jones. So my two questions are, Number one, was there any Kool-Aid involved? And number two, were you walking around? I just get, when you're talking, I get this whole Little House on the Prairie vibe where you're walking around with like this pilgrim hat on and you have on long sleeve shirt and a long sleeve or like a skirt down to your ankles and like some like Birkenstocks or something like that. Like, and I'm not trying to make light of your situation, no, obviously. Yes. But can you tell me, first of all, about the Kool-Aid, and was there Kool-Aid in the clothes? And then tell me more about what made this a cult in your eyes.
So the good thing is, by the time I was old enough to remember, so a lot of what I'm talking, so let me backtrack. So my parents came up here with this group, and then they actually, my father and my mother realized what was happening. One of the things I think that made them realize this was a lie was the fact that this person was kind of like, oh, we're going to move to upstate New York. We're going to build like a community building where we're all going to worship and just share this space. And then what ended up happening is him and his family ended up moving into that building that like everyone else had put their money and time and resources into. And not only that, like they found out he was like stealing their tithes and offerings. But before that happened too, and when my, you know, when there were concerns that were brought up from my parents, they were shamed, like, and they were kind of, I think he was, you know, this person called my dad something to the effect of kind of like, oh, don't listen, because my dad had stood up in the group and kind of spoken out against, because the person, the leader had said it's better to receive than to give. He flipped, like, it's better to give than to receive, and was like, no, it's actually better to receive than to give. And so when my father said something, he said, oh, don't listen to him. He's a Korah spirit. And so, which I guess for people that are in that community, like calling someone a Korah spirit is very, it's like a very derogatory, like negative thing, pretty much to say that you shouldn't trust this person. And so,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, all that to say that there, when I, cause I've always been very curious about like religious groups and like how people think in groups and move and make really like seemingly like drastic decisions in groups. And so when I started to look more into cults and like, Jim Jones is a great example. And thankfully there was no Kool-Aid as far as I know, like no one was killed.
Like great.
Thank, you know, thank God nobody died.
Yes.
But there was definitely that very, you know, come into our group. We're going to like love bomb you. And we're going to set really like strict hierarchies. Right. And then say, and then this leader is going to say that I'm the communicator with God. And God told me to do this. God told me to move to upstate New York. God told me that it's actually better to receive than to give. I know in the Bible, because they were a group of people that were actually supposedly following the Bible. And so he said, I know in the Bible it says it's better to give than to receive, but God told me it's better to receive than to give. And so, but he put himself in this position of power where no matter what he said, people believed him. And so that, and I, you know, just the fact that he said this, and then my parents, and this is where I think women really have to trust their intuition and their gut, because my mom never wanted to move to upstate New York. She never wanted to quit the Kennedy Space Center. That's where her and my dad met. But my father was a little bit more like, I think we should do this. And so they went there, and come to find out it was a big sham. I mean, they pretty much ended up separating from that group. But then a lot of those practices continued. So even after they were no longer part of that group, the homeschooling continued. The wearing the long skirts and no makeup and no earrings continued. And I think I think the thing that's most harmful that continued is just like the isolation and those patterns of just really wanting to have like ultimate control over like everything and not allowing for individual personalities and individual like experiences to thrive.
So how did that shape you as you began to go from being a baby to, you know, obviously a toddler, then a small child? And then now you're entering your young womanhood. So how did that shape you as a young woman?
It just always, I think I've always, probably to the annoyance of a lot of people, and maybe, you know, I think to people in my family, it's always made me very skeptical and just questioning of things. I think when I was little, there was always, for me, like, because of the group that we grew up in and that experience, religious experience, there always was a double standard in society. This is a problem at large, obviously. This is nothing new, but me as a child, not knowing that and not really knowing the language to speak to that, there was always different standards for my brothers and for my sisters and I. And so I would always ask questions about that. I mean, at one point, we were vegetarian, and like my brothers somehow were able to eat meat before us. And I was like, well, why can they eat meat? Like, I want to eat meat. But it led to other things too, like them being able to go to prom and us not being able to go to prom. And so like, there was always these things where I felt like, why do they get to have the fun? And why do we have to like, just watch it happening?
Wow. So was that a cultural, like religious kind of thing because they were boys, or was that just in general, life in general?
I think that it was a cultural / religious thing, because there was always this mentality that like women are kind of the gatekeepers, and kind of putting this responsibility on sexual morality on women. And so it's kind of like, oh, girls can't go to prom because everybody knows what happens at prom. And I think it was just kind of that type of like unspoken assumption that like, yeah, girls can't go because we know what's going to happen, but it's okay if the boys go. And if they do whatever to somebody else's daughter, then that's fine. And no one ever said that, but that was kind of the undertone, right? Like, it's kind of like, oh, boys will be boys. And you know, if they do what they do, it's that father's problem, so to speak. Stuff like that, I've always paid close attention to. It's really shaped how I think because everyone has blind spots, obviously, like we all have these blind spots in our personalities. And I think I've always just tried to question like my own. And I think when some of the tension that happened that kind of made me want to leave my house is because I felt like it was getting to a point where we just weren't on the same page. And I just felt like, okay, we need some space. We need some space.
Yeah. That makes complete sense. So a part of your message, you mentioned that, and I want to kind of talk about this. You've mentioned it before too, during the session, that you were primarily in a white environment, which has its own set of challenges, you know? But then you add the whole religious and cultish kind of situation to it. And it's just all over the place. But, what was that like being a young Black girl and just being in such a sea of white people and not necessarily having a lot of reflections of you for like the type of hair you have perhaps, or your skin color, or, you know, things that quote unquote Black people kind of are naturally drawn to just as we are, you know what I mean? What was it like to just be thrust upon this sea of whiteness and trying to gain your sense of identity?
It always felt extremely forced and uncomfortable, I think. And now that I look back on it, I can now put language to what was happening. I can say like, oh, it's because there were a lot of microaggressions happening around me. But at the time, sometimes microaggressions aren't quote unquote provable. So there's like, back then there wasn't a language around it. And it just left me in a constant state of being uncomfortable. And then also feeling like, I don't know, like no matter what. Some of my parents would always tell us, like, when you go into grocery stores, like, make sure you don't put your hands in your pockets because people are going to think that you're stealing. They would kind of say these other things about, like, you know, making sure that we pretty much did above and beyond what everybody else did. And I think that's something that when I was little, I actually believed, like, okay, if I do this, this, and that, then things will be fine. But there were, you know, I remember my first job was when I was 11. And at that point, I was high because my parents have always been like people that grew their own vegetables. And so that it was a kind of a natural job for me to take on. It was a natural job to take on. And that job was fine. I earned my first paycheck. I think it was like $53. And I was like, ooh, I'm rich. Like, I was feeling great about myself. But I think, you know, I remember when I was in high school, I think I was in 10th grade. I remember going to a local grocery store. I don't know if you guys have heard of IGA. It's like International Grocers Association or whatever. But anyway, I went to that store and the owner was actually like one of my neighbors. And I would always ask like, oh, are you guys hiring? Are you guys hiring? And he would always kind of look at me and kind of like smirk a little bit and say no. But then and the thing is too, that adds another layer to this is we would shop there. So like my mom would go there and get groceries. Cause she was always like support local, which is great. Except I think had we known that the local was also racist, we wouldn't be supporting local. Point is he never hired me. He kept saying, fill out an application. We're not hiring. But like every time we would go grocery shopping, one of my peers from school would have been hired to work there. There was that situation. There was also another situation with my neighbor who I used to babysit for, when he was asking me like, oh, how did you guys end up in the town we were in? And, you know, I said a group of us, at this time I was literally probably like 14 or 15. And I just was like, oh yeah, a group of people. Cause I didn't want to, at the time I didn't know it was a cult and I didn't want to like get too descriptive too either for him. So I just said a group of us moved from Florida, and then he said, oh, did you move up here in a gang? And this is a grown man. This is a grown man in his early 40s, like asking this to like a 14, 15 year old girl. And then, And later there was his daughter who's innocent and like so cute, but she was like five at the time. I think she said we were watching a music video and like Brandy came on and she said, and she just randomly said, Daddy doesn't like black people. And so I kind of like looked at her and then she said, oh, don't worry. He just doesn't like black men. And she's so, she doesn't know. She's literally 5 years old. And so, but I think that was kind of an affirmation for that comment he made about, did you move up here in a gang, and just some other odd interactions that were had. And I think looking back on it, it just, there's like an unsettled, just like anger, because I think like at that time I was like a teenager, I was like a child. And so the fact that you're asking me to babysit your kids, but do you know what, like, it's just the complexity, like all the complexities of that dynamic.
Wow. Yeah. So it's like my question is, when were you allowed to be black? Like in your experience, was there, like, did you ever, when you were a kid, like, I hate to say typical things, but I remember, like, parts of my childhood, having the cornrows with the little beads on the end and, you know, hanging out with cousins and, you know, that kind of stuff. Did you get to experience that kind of stuff when you were growing up?
No, that's a good question. So I did. So I've always, my mom always did our hair. It was like me and my other two sisters that lived in that family at the time, like would do cornrows, would do like box braids. And then when we got old enough, we were actually allowed to get like the hair extensions. We had that experience. We also did go to Florida. We would go back to Florida, like once a year, once every other year, so that we could visit my mom's family and my dad's family and like hang out with the cousins and do like family reunions and that type stuff. So, and, you know, the electric slide, which, you know, none of us knew how to do at the time, but we learned at the family reunion. There were pockets of it. And I like, and then you go back home, like, and you always miss it. So you go there, you experience it for like a week or so, but then you're back, at home base. And so,
I was going to say, you come back. So you've had this fun experience with your mom, your dad, your family. You're getting your summer tan and you come back dark and you've just had an amazing experience. And then you come back and you're just like right back to, you know, the microaggressions and just having to, like you said, code switch and be very yes. aware of who you are in this space and not be able to just be Rebecca, you know, just be Rebecca. You were just, you, right. but you were Rebecca, the Black girl. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think the part that like sits with, that frustrates me the most is like, you know, I you know, I did go to college. I've been through my own work, like my own personal work to kind of figure out a person that I'm happy with and where I feel happy. But I feel like my parents are still, and it bothers me because I want them to be happy, but I feel like because of the, and I, when I look at cults and study them, they all go back to the foundation of like, of white supremacy to me. And to me, all I see when I see how they're functioning right now is I feel like they have been abused by the systematic white supremacy for so long, but because they are super religious, it's, they have, there's like a blinder where they don't see the connection. And that's been really hard to accept. Because I mean, I have a great relationship with them now. It's because there's an understanding that people do the best that they can do. I think my frustration and anger is a lot more. And people may say like, oh, because it's easier not to be mad at your parents. No, I've been mad at them and I've talked to them. Like I've been through that stage. But I think what I end up with is just an overall like anger at the system that created this. And when you look at, you know, when you really look at cults, whether it's Jim Jones or like other evangelical cults, they really function in the same way that in the systematic same way that like white supremacy does. And they were started in essence in this country by that same, you know, like the Ku Klux Klan, like they all function in the same way. And I think it's hard for people to see that because religion is, and it's hard to see that because religion is so personal. And it's hard to explain to someone that that's connected. Like one thing that's so loved is connected to something else that like we as a society, or at least Black and Indigenous people of color see as such a horrible thing, right? Like, so it's hard to kind of merge those two. Yeah. I think it's hard for people to merge those two.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you go to college and you mentioned in your email that you had an amazing guidance counselor in high school who encouraged you to go to college. And that's where your life just kind of started to take off and flourish. And now you're getting your glow up and you're starting to come into your own. So tell me more about that. Like when did Rebecca really start to find out what Rebecca, who she was, what she liked, things she enjoyed, things she didn't enjoy? When did she just kind of like, I want to say have her whole side? Because, but I'm making a joke when I say that because I just told someone that today.
I know you love this podcast, but if you've been on the hunt for other unapologetically Black podcasts to listen to, I want to invite you to give Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR a listen. They featured an episode of It's Been a Minute, and it was with Tracy Ellis Ross, and it was like a breath of fresh air for me. She touched upon her work, which of course includes Girlfriends, and we know the legacy of that show and also how that dynamic specifically between Joan and Tony still has a huge impact on Black culture. But it gave me room to reflect not only about the ways I am in community with Black women, but also how I am being in relationship with myself. NPR's episodes, they just hit differently. So NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience, from the It's Been a Minute episode with Tracy Ellis Ross to the Code Switch episode on the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott. These episodes are rooted in our richness and our history that we will not allow to be erased or marginalized. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
One of my favorite memories as a little girl was when I went to the beach. Seeing the ocean waves, smelling the salty air, and feeling the sun on my skin was pure radical joy. Now, certain scents like Osea's Undaria Algae Body Oil will instantly trigger those feel-good memories because it literally smells like summer in a bottle. Inside, you'll find blissful notes of lime, grapefruit, cypress, mango, and mandarin. The scent is so divine that I cannot help but to smell myself randomly throughout the day. And when I use it after a shower, my skin is glowy, soft, and smooth. I've talked about Osea many times, and there's a reason for that. It is a clean, soothing part of my maintenance routine, one that I refuse to be without. I absolutely adore Osea. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SELFCARE at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use code SELFCARE for 10% off.
There is no shame in needing to rebuild. So I'm in a season of taking back my financial power, and that looks like getting my credit together because having credit is powerful. I'll be making a move next year to another state, and I'm doing what I know to do now so that my credit won't prevent me from being able to rent another home. If you're in a similar situation, one tool I want you to know about is Kickoff, the credit builder that requires no credit check and is super simple to get started with today. Kickoff is a credit line that is just for credit building, not everyday spending, and there are zero catches. You make on-time payments, the credit bureau will see your good behavior, and your credit grows. Sign up in minutes from your phone and start building credit right away. Join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for a dollar at getkickoff.com/selfcare today. That's Kickoff without the C. GetKIKOFF.com/selfcare. Special offer applies to new Kickoff premium customers for their first month only. Subject to approval and only available on getkickoff.com/selfcare. Terms of offer are subject to change.
But, and by that, I mean, and by whole side, I mean, now you're wearing, you know, you're wearing jeans and, you know, maybe yes. crop tops and, you know, all that stuff. Like, tell me more about when you really started to discover yourself and just come into your own.
I think it definitely started when I went to college. I never tried a lot in high school. And so I never really thought about going to school. But my guidance counselor was like, you know, Rebecca, your SAT scores are good. Like, you should apply to this college and that college. So I applied, I got in. And I remember the first week I went there, it felt like a culture shock, and it was really hard to adjust to. But I think it really taught me to try to, you know, to figure out what was happening with me. It's the first time that I actually realized I had really bad test anxiety and had to actually meet with someone at school to figure out what was happening with me. I had to meet with a counselor there. By recommendation of one of my math teachers, he was great. He was like, you do really well on the homework, but something happens when you take the test, like you need to figure out what that's about. Mm. So I did that, and that really led to me having to do a lot more interpersonal work. And I think it actually came to, I feel like I got my glow up when I turned, like, this was, I went to this institute called, it's called Kripalu. It's actually like a wellness center in the Berkshires, but they do a lot of like, they do a lot of like yoga workshops and a lot of like healing workshops. And I remember there was one quote they said that like really stuck with me, because I think because I realized I was like, I'm not doing this. But like, and I was like, this is not happening. But they said this quote where they were like, you know, at some point, your thoughts and your beliefs and your actions need to line up, right? Like, they're never going to be completely linear. But like, when you figure out who you are and what you think and what you believe in, you need to make sure that, like, to the best of your ability, what you're doing actually aligns with that. And I think that's when I really realized, because I always identified myself as an evangelical Christian, as like a born again Christian. And this is nothing against religion or people that identify that way. That's fine. But I realized, why am I calling myself that? Like, I go out, I drink, like I do, like I'm not actually living that life that I'm trying to pretend I'm supposed to be living. And so I think that for me really made me figure out, like, you need to like pull back and figure out what you're here to do on this earth. Like, you need to figure out who God is separate from what evangelical Christianity said. Like, you need to figure that out, and it's a process, but you need to figure out a way to live your life in a way that actually feels like it fits. Because up until then, it never felt like it fit. It just always felt like I was trying to, like, it's like you're, you know, it just never felt like my life. It felt like I was living something that was prescribed for someone else.
Gosh. So you said at some point your thoughts, actions, and beliefs need to line up. Yeah.
Yes. And we're human, so they're never gonna Yeah, and I mean, obviously, they're never going to line up in a complete linear way, but I think there doesn't need to be drastic, like, peaks and spikes either. And at one point, that's what it felt like. That's when I kind of had a moment of, like, okay, like, what, Rebecca, what are you doing? Like, what's happening?
No, yeah, I completely get that. I'm sorry, did I cut you off? What were you going to say?
No, go ahead. I was done.
Okay. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think sometimes we get to that point at some point, some maybe sooner than others, but when your thoughts and beliefs and actions line up, I think that's when you're more so just kind of like in the right flow of your life.
Right.
You kind of on this certain path and things they're not easy, but they're a little bit easier because you kind of know where you're headed. But when you're kind of all over the place, I think that's when life is just a little more challenging when things don't quite line up because they're like they're so at odds. As much as we don't maybe believe it, like you may think, for example, like you'll think, let's say I am so smart and I can do anything. Like, in other words, like an affirmation, like if you're thinking, I'm so smart and I can do anything I put my mind to. But then in your actions, you know, you're saying other negative things or you're not really doing those types of things that kind of confirm your thoughts or beliefs about yourself. When those things don't jive, you know, I think that's where confusion sets in and your life is just kind of, you're just at odds with yourself.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, it does. Yeah. And it's things are all like not in alignment and and you feel it. It's a very tangible experience. But I think that's also part of our culture too. Like, there's a lot of distractions happening, and so it's very easy to not do the reflective work to get to that point. You know what I mean? Like, it's very easy to like just avoid doing it because it's not easy. And even when you are living a life where your thoughts and beliefs and actions sort of line up, like, it doesn't mean it's an easy life, but it just feels. It feels more like easeful, even though it's not easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. I'm like nodding my head. You can't see me, but I'm totally nodding my head and I'm in agreement with you because it's so true. I feel like my life is just a little more balanced when everything is just in alignment, one accord, you know, and it just makes sense. It makes sense. I think I'm less anxious during those times as well.
Yes.
When I just, for me, because my anxiety, I tend to get a little more stressed, out of control or anxious or whatever, when one of the three is just like not in alignment with everything else. So that makes complete sense. I love that quote.
But it doesn't come intuitively though, right? Like, it's almost like you have to pull back to figure out which part's not in alignment. You know, like you have to like pull back, right? To figure out what's
not working. Yeah, because it's like, you're like, okay, I'm saying this thing, but am I really feeling this way? And do my actions really, like, who am I trying to fool? Like, why am I, it's like, kind of like, I feel like when I'm not in alignment, you're like, okay, it's either who am I trying to impress or who do I think I'm kidding? You know what I'm saying? Am I just saying certain things because I want the approval of someone else, but I really secretly do XYZ or feel XYZ, even though I say, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but
No, absolutely.
You really have to be, I think that's where self-awareness kind of comes in. And I didn't really become very self-aware. I mean, actually, no, I take that back. I've always been very, very self-aware. But it was for all the wrong reasons. I was very able to like pick apart things about myself. And I'm still very, very self-aware, but I've kind of flipped it to where it's definitely more positive than it is negative. So, but yeah, having that self-awareness is crucial because it's just a really important aspect of who you are. And the things that you're going to do or capable of doing, in my opinion. So agreed. I'm sorry that I kind of went off on a tangent on that.
No, it's true. But, it's true.
Yeah. So I guess, has Rebecca, have you found yourself or are you still looking for yourself?
I have found me. Yes, I have found me. I found myself. There are obviously, you know, I don't think anyone ever finds themselves and then it's like this goal that's done. I think it's an ongoing goal, right? Like, I mean, yeah. I'm still alive. So like, I have the desire to continue to grow and to learn, but I do feel like I'm living a life that's mine. It doesn't feel like it's somebody else's anymore. It does not feel like it's somebody else's anymore. And that feels, it feels genuine. So I have found myself. Yes.
Were there any techniques or exercises or routines or self-care regimens or anything that kind of helped you in this journey to finding yourself?
You know, I think I have had very supportive, like my guidance counselor in high school was very supportive. I've really engaged in like work with like mind body exercises, which at the time, you know, doing yoga because of my background, I was always taught yoga was like not okay. And that it was, you don't
my
know.
Gosh.
Yeah. Well, because
can we please talk about that?
Oh.
Time out. I'm sorry. Okay. I did not mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
But can
no,
we?
No, it's okay.
Yes, Rebecca, please. Let's talk about that really quickly because right now I am at odds with that whole thing. See, I am a Christian and, I was always like yoga. No. But it got to the point where I'm not even trying to exaggerate. Even sometimes today, like, you know, when you're small, the things that are ingrained, it's hard to remove old thoughts and patterns and habits and things like that. So I was always taught that yoga is new age and, you know, you're praying to certain gods. And I do think that that is a part of it, but I don't do yoga to honor different religious gods, you know, from other cultures, doing the poses and things like that. I am doing yoga so that I can actually move my body.
Yes.
And not like a 75-year-old woman in a 40-something-year-old woman's body.
Yes.
The same thing with meditation. Meditation is bad. Yoga is bad. And I still even struggle to even call it those things. Like, for example, I don't say meditate a lot. For me, I have to really make sure so that it's comfortable to me. For me, I have to make sure that I get quiet. I call it silence, solitude. I'll say meditate every once in a while, but for me, it's more so like silence, solitude, breath work, breathing, things like that. I try not to use certain words, though it's not always avoidable. And that's because it's been so ingrained that these things are bad.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember, I hear you, like, I feel you. I remember reading about familiar spirits and my parent, like, there was a lot of like talk in the group about like, you know, witches and familiar spirits and mediums and all of this. And so I hear you. I grew up with a very deep fear of like all of that. I think I realized my parents used to have this book in their, they used to have a lot of like natural health books. And one of them was by this author, called Jethro Kloss. And at one point I like looked through the book that they had and that they really like referenced a lot. And it had like yoga poses in it. And I think for me, like when I was like, oh, Jethro Kloss endorses yoga. It must be okay. Like, and I think that was like my association. but my parents, they have this book and it has yoga in it, so like maybe it's okay. So I remember hearing about the benefits of it, and I'm not gonna lie, like the first class I tried, I was like, I can't, and it wasn't even because of what we were talking about, it was just more I got so bored I left. But honestly, like, I think people have to really look at when people say these things about yoga, And if they're like, what scripture are you going off of that validates that? Like, what are you looking at that kind of validates what you're saying and what your experience is? Because the reality is, a lot of the people that have these opinions about yoga are also people who celebrate Christmas, which if you kind of look into it, it's not about the birth of Christ. It is about a pagan holiday. Right. There's just all of these double standards. And like, I think I'm very keen to those. And so it's hard for me to glom on. I think it came to a point where I just saw so many double standards and things that weren't lining up that I was like, I need to pull back from this. And yes, pray to God and believe in God, but not necessarily believe like that because someone's telling me yoga is, you know, we don't know what the Aum chant means, that you can't do it. Like, we do know what it means. It, you know, like that there's a saying that, you know, the light in me honors the light in you. And why is that? Why are we demonizing that? Like, why is that?
Girl.
Yes.
I don't even know. I can tell you right now, I don't say namaste. I don't chant. I don't say I just don't, because and I probably will be like this forever. It is just a part of me. It is just a part of me now. It is above me now. It is just a part of who I am. Like, that will be it forever.
And that's okay. I think that's your truth. I mean, if saying because, you know, when people say or people say like namaste, and you know, people kind of are like, oh, it means the light in me honors the light in you. Then if that doesn't resonate with you and you feel uncomfortable, I don't think people should force themselves to do it. Do you know what I mean? I don't think you should then force yourself to do it. But I think for me, there was just so much work that a lot of research and like looking into different practices. And like, this is probably for a whole nother topic, but just, just books that were left, like how, like the Gospel of Thomas was left out of the Bible, but yet there's a scripture that says you can't take or add anything to the Bible. But then I'm like, well, why was the Gospel of Thomas taken out? Why were like Songs of Susan? Like, there was all these books that were taken out. And I think it's just the contradictions that kind of made me feel like I needed to pull back from what people who were telling me they knew what God wanted and try to figure that out for myself. Because one of the things I did find and like about yoga was the fact that there's this idea that you don't need to always subscribe to like external people to figure out what God wants you to do, that, you know, you are able to kind of get yourself to a space where you should be able to get direction from God on your own without going through these other people. You know what I like? Because like historically, that sometimes actually ended up in really abusive and oppressive situations. And I did like that. And it's not a non-belief in God. I think it's just rethinking about how we connect to God. And you know, if it feels okay, I don't think people should like force themselves to to say namaste just because someone says, oh, it means the light in me honors the light in you. If it doesn't feel right, then I think people shouldn't do it, right?
Yeah, I'm like, those devil worshipers talking about namaste, I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying it because I don't know what I'm conjuring up, right? Like, I don't know what I'm conjuring up.
Exactly. I'm so glad you understand where I'm, but this has been my life for 40 plus years. So no, I'm trying to do that work of really figuring out my beliefs and what I truly believe. You know what I'm saying? And trying to unlearn, like, for example, how, like, I don't even go to church anymore, which is a whole nother story, but I don't feel like I have to go to church anymore. I don't feel like I have to tithe. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't feel like that's something that God is telling me to do. I have my relationship with God. I pray to God and, you know, and all that stuff. But there's just some things I've started to kind of break away from, even though they were a part of my life for so many years. So I'm still in a very awakening, learning Bree. And like you said, it's not like a destination, like, oh, okay, now I know Rebecca and this is everything. Here's a whole list of 1,000 things I know about myself and I have arrived, you know? Yes, it's not that at all. It's definitely an ongoing, you know, because the older we get, our situations change. We become involved into different people with every stage of our life. And I think that's a beautiful thing, but Yeah, just that whole yoga thing. And I have always struggled with that, like always struggled with that and just different things like that. Now, and the same thing with like chakras and crystals and all that stuff. That for me is still like a huge, like red strobing light. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't ever do any of that kind of stuff. But I'm slowly starting to really figure out what's good for me and what I feel like God is telling me to do and what and who God is telling me to be. So I completely understand where you're coming from with all that. That's, you just hit the nail on the head with that one.
Yes. And it's hard because, you know, I feel like in our society, like in our like religious societies and religious cultures, it's very subversive to say what I'm saying, even though I'm not saying anything. I try to be very, I don't want to like, people that do follow, that's fine. I'm just saying what my individual path was. And I did, when I first went to college, I wore the dresses. I really gave it a concerted effort until I started to look at all of the things that, you know, that didn't make sense. And one of the things that I was looking into was the Nag Hammadi Library when I was in college. Like, there's a lot of things that came up where I just really started to question the establishment. And then I think in 2016, with what was happening politically and where a lot of evangelical Christians stood with that, that really kind of like, you know, did it for me as far as me understanding what we were working with or what I was working with. And if it was actually meaningful and authentic to me and where my truth was.
I think that's so important. Like these days, it's just like all about your truth.
Yes.
You know, that's what it's all about. Like above pretty much all else.
Yes. And not in like a silo either. When I say my truth, right. I think people's truth can happen in a silo, but I think that needs to happen from like, you've been out there, you've had different experiences, right? Like you haven't lived, because I was in a silo and then I kind of made efforts to make sure my life was not in a silo, you know what I mean? And so from that experience is where I kind of gathered like those more broad cross perspectives is where I kind of landed where I am today.
Yeah. So as we kind of wrap up this call, or this session, I should say, this podcast session, if there was a way that you could connect with younger Rebecca and offer her some advice or healing words or love or anything like that, what would you say to her?
I think one of the things that I would say is that you don't have to keep asking yourself what you need to change for people to like you. That was a big, like, if there was a thought bubble above my head, there was always this kind of things of like, my goals were always what I was going to do to make myself more likable or more popular or more accepted. That was a running theme. It kind of, you know, and so I think I would tell little Rebecca that, you know, you don't have to do that. You like, I think at that point, if I could have, I would have liked to see me plug more into things that I was interested in and make that more the center instead of me centering all of the like chaos and like difficulties I was having. Cause I am also a very anxious person. And so I like to fix things. And so it was kind of like, okay, what do I need to do to make people like me? What do I need to do to make this happen? And that's not the life of a child. Like that's not a childhood, right? So I would tell Rebecca to stop doing that and to start like plugging into things that I like, start putting my energy more towards the things I found enjoyable, like singing and animals and just like, I've always loved, which is going to probably sound funny, but I've always loved like horror movies and like amusement parks. Like I've always loved those things. And so like, I just trying to center things that I like instead of centering all the things that are wrong with me and like what I need to do to fix them.
I think that's excellent advice, Rebecca. And it's something definitely that even older Rebecca and pretty much anyone that's listening can really connect with that message that you would give to your younger self. Well,
yeah,
that's basically our time. I want to thank you so very much for joining me on this session today, Rebecca.
Thank you, Bree, for having me. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That is it for this week's episode. I want to thank again Rebecca for being so awesome and sharing her story. I learned so much in just that short amount of time, and it really helped me. These episodes, I'm hoping, are helping you too, but they really helped me just to learn more about myself, think a little differently, stretch, you know, mentally, just my beliefs and things like that. So I'm so honored that she is a part of my journey of learning. So I wanted to just really quickly, before I wrap up, just say that since this episode was recorded, which was a few months ago, the reason why I wanted to just kind of do an update is because I feel like I need to be authentic. I need to just be honest about the things that I share on the show as much as I possibly can. And one of the things that jumped out to me when I went back and re-listened to this episode was how I was saying, you know, I was struggling with doing yoga, with meditation, things like that. And that is true. But what has definitely changed for me is that now I'm like just pretty much solid on the fact that for my faith journey, for my walk, with God, I do not do yoga and I don't do what is traditionally known as meditation. For me, meditating is, meditating on God's word. So what would look like mainstream meditation for me would just be more so what I've always done, being still, being quiet, taking time to think and reflect and things like that. And then as far as yoga, that's just something that I've ultimately decided, that I will not do. I feel like God has steered me away from that for me and for my journey. And so I just wanted to just to share that and just be upfront and say that, because again, as of this recording that I did with Rebecca, I just wasn't sure what direction I was supposed to be going in. And I was leaning more towards doing that, but things have been confirmed that for me, for my walk, they're just not for me. So I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. I hope that you enjoyed this week's episode. If you have any questions, you can always email me at connect@browngirlselfcare.com or hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. And with that, I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will see you on the next episode.